This is Edge Cases, a podcast about mostly Apple-related software development. Featuring myself and my co-host, the Cagney and Lacey of Objective-C, I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 26. It's Saturday, November 10th, 2012. And are you ready for our topic this week, Wolf?
More ready than ready.
How ready is that? Can you give that a numerical scale?
It's kind of like the white zombie, more human than human, like that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, our topic this week is automated tests.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Yes, and so I will be running the podcast and not doing it personally, because we're automating it, you see. Anyway, okay, so bit of follow-up before we get started. Peter Hosey, whom I mentioned in our Tabs and Spaces episode, episode 20, on Twitter, his name is Boardzo, the word board and board like the mood, not board like the wooden board, plus Z-O, has been tweeting about his experiences with AppCode in great detail over the last couple of days. Unfortunately, he hasn't given those tweets any particular hashtag, so there won't be any easy way of finding them later. But if there is a way to look at his tweets by date, you can look at, say, yesterday's tweets and the day before, that sort of thing, and that will give you some of his impressions. He talks specifically a lot about refactoring in ways that were interesting for me to hear. Still doesn't change my mind, but if you're interested, there's more information there. Okay, so we'll get started. And we'll start with a blog post of mine from my Subjective Observer weblog. And I'll put the URL for this in the show notes. The post is called Putting It to the Test. It's from 2011. And it talks about my conclusions about automated tests, because I've been thinking about them a bit, and I've been using them a bit in my own code for a while. And so there were three things that I said in this post. I'm going to read the first one here. I've rarely, if ever, seen unit tests break. In theory, the tests exist so that when you add functionality to a class or group of classes in a way that changes the code paths of existing functionality, you're sure the existing functionality still works. In practice, I've seen that either those classes are never touched again, or they're only added to, not modified, or the modifications are simple enough that they just don't lead to breakage. And I would say that that's still true. Every set of unit tests I've ever made, every set of automated tests I've ever made, there have not been any, not even just significant, but like any breakages as I keep working on the code base. The second point was, rewrites don't bring the tests along. So if you're, what I'm saying before was, most of the time you're not really changing your code in a significant enough way to break the tests. If you are changing your code in a significant enough way that it would break the tests, well, the tests would most likely need to be rewritten anyway. So let's say you had an app which had its own very simple data model, and then in version 2 of your app, you switched to Core Data because you needed the more complex functionality that Core Data gives you. Well, then any tests that you wrote against your old API wouldn't work against Core Data, which has its own very specific API, which you probably weren't using in version 1. So I would say this is still true as well, though it's rare. I've only seen one real-world case of this, where that a rewrite happened, and then therefore some tests had to be thrown away. So rare, but it happens. And then the last point has to do with sorting, which, while also true, is kind of minor, so I'm just going to move on. And so you can read the post to find out more about that. And since I read that post, I've come up with some more conclusions, one reason to have this podcast, and I'll be getting to them throughout the rest of the episode. So when I started to hear about unit tests, especially when they were added to Xcode, I wanted to learn more, and so I went to the source. And do you know who the source is?
Of unit tests in Xcode?
No, not just of Xcode, just sort of unit tests in general.
Oh yeah, that's the X units thing. So what was that? That was like Smalltalk unit. What was that? But it comes from the Smalltalk folks.
You may be going back a little further than I was going back.
Oh, you thinking about Sente then?
Kent Beck.
Okay, Kent Beck. There you go.
Right. So he. No, I don't. So if it goes back to Smalltalk, did he come from a Smalltalk background? Do you know?
I believe he did.
Okay. So he actually. From what I can tell, he was best known before his testing stuff for Extreme Programming, XP. And so in my mind, then that would make him sort of the beginner of two programming movements. So what his big thing is test-driven development. And he wrote a book about it, which is also called Test-Driven Development, which I have on my shelf. So I've read it. And what he says is that there are three steps you should take over and over again when you write code in this way that he recommends that you write. And the first step is write a test that doesn't work. Then write the code that makes the test work and do it quickly. Don't spend a lot of time architecting it. Just spit it out. And then three, refactor your code to avoid any duplication. And I guess the implication there is that the way you would normally make code work very quickly is probably just cutting and pasting from somewhere else. So now you're going to get rid of that. Now you're going to make sure that all that is abstracted out correctly. Now, do you use test-driven development, Wolf?
I do selectively. So in the majority of the code, I do not. In small sections of code, like when implementing a protocol or other things, I will do a test-driven development, and I find it useful.
Well, my thought here is that it makes almost no sense to try to do test-driven development for a UI-driven application.
I agree with that.
No! All right, well, okay, we're going to violently agree then. Again, we'll see if you have any other... anything. We'll see if we can discover anything we will disagree about, because I have a lot more opinions on the way. So, the first big reason... is that there is no easy and effective way to test UI functionality, especially for iOS. Now, I have seen systems, helper applications, products that you can buy, where they will take screenshots of your current application and compare them against screenshots that you took before when you knew the app was working the way you wanted them to, and then compare the old against the new, and that's how they test UI. Have you seen systems like this, Wolf?
Not recently, but yeah, I mean, it seemed to me to be more popular on the Windows side of the fence, but I knew they did exist for the Mac, but I haven't seen any recently.
Right. They definitely exist, because we used one where I worked. But, and so they work to a degree, but they don't work very well. And you can imagine why. If you move one control over by one pixel, bam. Your test doesn't work anymore. And when you're fiddling with the UI, just trying to get it to be exactly the way you want, then it can be hard to have your test be running. So I used a version of this at Apple, and we spent a lot of time maintaining the test. Well, the QA engineer spent a lot of time maintaining the test. For example, there was, for one particular release, internal release of the OS, there was a glitch, and all the fonts were screwed up. So that meant that everywhere you displayed fonts, they were sort of squashed or different than they were otherwise, and bam, every test failed, because every test had a picture of UI which used some sort of text in it. And all of the, well, some of the ones I know about, of these systems use AppleScript in order to invoke the behavior in the applications. And as I've said before, I find that to be inherently unstable in my experience. Now, Wolf, you've had better luck with AppleScript-based automation than I have, I believe, if I remember.
I would guess so, yes. But I haven't really used it for like automatic UI testing.
Right, the testing, right. And I was thinking about this, and I think I know why. Well, I have one theory, and that is that a lot of the testing for this sort of thing that involves AppleScript involves timers. Because you're going to start an action, you're going to select something in a menu, push a button, and then you have to wait until the UI responds and gets to the state where you want it to be at. So let's say you want to open a window. Well, okay, you wait 2 seconds for the window to show up. Great. Then you run under a particular situation where something else is going on in the background, something takes a little longer than it should, and now it took 4 or 5 seconds to open the window. Bam, your test fails, but not for a good reason. Okay, so you lengthen the timer to 4 or 5 seconds. Okay, now bam, you hit a case where it just really drags on, and it's like 8 seconds. Oh, all right, well, okay. So that's just one bad case, but you gotta have your test always succeeding. So you make the timer now in 10 seconds. Great. Now it's never going to fail. Okay. The trouble there is you have to run these tests yourself. If there is a failure, you have to be able to see what's going on if one of your tests fails. And that means now for every one of those timers that you've lengthened to make sure that it always works, you're sitting around fiddling your thumbs. Yeah. Waiting for this to finish for 8 seconds each time. And if you have 100 tests, well, then that's, you know, you can do the math. That's a lot of time to wait. That's a lot of time that's going to break up the rhythm of you trying to get your work done. Now, if you don't want to use these sorts of systems to run your UI tests, there are other ways to do it. You can trigger UI actions and check the state of your UI by going to the, let's say, the view controllers directly, going to the code directly. And I'm not really a fan of this either. I think it would work better than the, you know, pictures, comparing pictures. But I'm afraid of working at that lower level, not necessarily giving you the full certainty that you're testing the right thing, that your tests are really going to show you what's going on and what you actually want.
Yeah, I would be worried about, like, say, an IP outlet going nil on you, and that if you're talking at the view controller level, that's exactly the type of thing you'd miss.
Sure, sure. I was thinking more along the lines of things like you could have the same sort of timer issues with this stuff as well, but it's more, I'm not sure if I can come up with a good example. But yeah, basically, since you're testing variables, since you're testing properties instead of the actual UI, there could always be this disconnect between what you think you're testing. I mean, you're testing implementation. And also, a lot of this stuff is going to have to do with how it feels. So maybe it works in the sense that the state changes in the correct way, but when you look at it, a particular animation stutters a bit because you're doing more work now in the background of your application, and your test won't catch that change, but you would catch it if you were looking at it. So there are things that in the UI that automated tests can't verify. You can't run a script to test feel. So, and of course on iOS, there's no way to get this information anyway. You can't have a separate application that can poke at your application on the device. And there's no way for it to take pictures of your UI on the device either. So you're kind of screwed there. And also, as you kind of going back to what you were saying about the most important functionality to test is often not necessarily the widgets, but it's the integration. So you have data from the server, and you want to show it in your app UI. You have user input in the UI, and you want to make sure it gets up to the server. Or you're offloading work into another thread or a process on your application, and you want to make sure that work gets done properly and gets funneled back up to your UI properly. So even if you do want to test them, and of course you do, setting up the test harness to do so isn't trivial for these things. It's not just a matter of, you know, write a real quick test and then write the code that will fulfill that test. You need to set up a harness. Maybe you need to set up an extra machine so we can talk to the server. You need to have a test server running that will have the data that you want. And then what about when the server has to upgrade to a new version? Well, you need to test the old version and the new version, blah, blah, blah. It's really as if Kent Beck is envisioning a completely different world than the world that I normally live in when I'm writing Cocoa applications. It's just different visions of things. And that gets me to thinking about belated definition of terms here. What Kent Beck is talking about really is unit tests. And so what are unit tests? Unit tests are actually, I'm supposed to have this handy when I started this and I didn't write it down. In any case, unit tests, I'm going to paraphrase here. You can go, I'll put a link to the Wikipedia article about it as well. But unit tests are basically testing the smallest unit of code of work in your application. And in Cocoa applications, that's generally the class. And then there's also UI testing. I don't know if there's a more official name for it than that, but I just call it UI testing. And then the third kind is integration tests or system tests. And that's what I was talking about before with talking with your server or that sort of thing. And all of them are important. And that's why I talk about automated tests. I don't say unit tests for everything. And so you got to figure out which ones are important. Now, with server-driven apps, which is the way a lot of important apps are these days, you don't want the unit testing logic to be on the client, because you want your data model testing, your data model functionality and the data model functionality that you're going to test up on the server, because you're going to have a couple of different clients for it. At least a lot of times you are. And you don't want each of the clients to be fiddling with your data model in their own custom ways that's then each different than the next one. You want all that stuff to be on the server. You want to do as much logic on the server as you can. Well, if that logic is going to be on the server, then as a Cocoa developer, you don't have to test it. And I think that's actually where he's coming from. Like, his tests were really, they were Java-based in the book that I read, and it seemed very, very server-oriented. So yeah, unit tests go off on the servers, and Kent Beck can go off and do that in his time, and then we have to figure out what's left, what we can do in our applications. Good so far?
Good so far.
So what I want to talk about then is a couple of examples of testing that I have used in my code. And I'm going to have one example from Xcode and one example from my own work. So in Xcode, if you were to bring up the extract method or signature refactoring transformation, it would show you a text box. And that text box has the signature, that the proposed signature of the method or function that you're extracting your code into. And I think this is fairly obscure. I'm not sure all that many people, A, use refactoring in Xcode, B, if they do use this particular feature of it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, I don't even know. I haven't used that transformation. I use primarily refactoring for renaming things. Right. So, yes, to extract a method, does that put in its own class?
If you're extracting code from an existing function or method into a new function or method.
Oh, okay.
So it's relatively standard, well, it's totally standard as a refactoring transformation. But yeah, I guess, and it's also sort of takes the most work, takes the most effort. But yeah, so when you make a new method, you've got to have a new signature for it. And this is normally where you would just type in a new method name, for example, and you're done. But because it's a text box, because it isn't a more complicated UI than that, it's got the whole signature in there. In theory, you could delete the whole signature. You could type in whatever you want. And what I wanted to do there was not leave you in as much of a lurch as we could by saying, well, no, you've typed something in wrong, you know, syntax error, abort, and you know, leave you at that. I wanted to give you error messages at each step of the way so that you could basically retype in the entire signature from scratch if you wanted to, and we would guide you to do that. Now, this logic is not completely simple. There's more to it. There are more edge cases to it. There's more steps to it than there would be normally for regular UI logic. So, you know, you need to make sure that, for example, you know, the return type is correct. You typed that correctly. Okay, now you've typed the name correct. You've typed all the parameters in. You've typed the number of parameters that you need, that if they all have the same type, that they're distinguished by in some way that we can figure out. And what I did when I was writing this logic was I said, well, the logic to do all that sort of little mini parsing and everything else doesn't need to be tied to the actual UI. You don't need to actually open Xcode and open a project and start a refactoring in order to do that logic. No, all you need is a string. All you need to do is string manipulation. Well, that sounds like something you can just take out and put in its own little test arena that's just, you know, linked against foundation. And so that's what I did. And I found that when I was sort of going through, well, okay, here are all of the tests, all of the things that could possibly go wrong, that first of all, it was much faster to do it that way. And it also helped me to discover the edge cases. So if you think of all the tests that you could run as a grid, well, maybe I filled in, you know, in a 9x9 grid and it's got like 81 cells in it. Well, maybe I filled in 79 of them in just thinking about it normally. Well, now that I can see the outlines of that data, I can, oh, okay, now let me fill in this other one, let me fill in this other one, and do it in a more systematic way than I might have otherwise. And also, I was doing this while I was developing it. So it actually is very test-driven, but I was still not necessarily using it for later maintenance. I was using it entirely to suss out what needed to be done while I was writing it. And so it doesn't really feel like test-driven development. It's more like data-driven development, test data-driven development. That's really where it helped me quite a bit. And this also made me think that this kind of logic is the sort of thing that you're going to see sometimes in Cocoa applications. Because let's say, for example, that this had been data that I was sending up to the server, and is like I was saying in other examples. And because you want the server to do most of the data model work. Well, if you have this thing to construct, like this signature or, let's say, other kind of data, you don't necessarily want to have a submit button where you only find out whether you've done something wrong once you click submit, once you've done all this work. No, you want to find out as you go. And so that's one place where I think this sort of logic might come in handy, is the kind of polish you want in your Cocoa application. Do you want that immediate feedback? You don't want to be going to the server. So sometimes that's going to mean putting in this extra logic into your application right where you are instead of asking the server to do it. And also it means you could have error messages which are Cocoa-centric, which aren't lowest common denominator, that sort of thing. So this is really a big example of one area where testing has really been a win for me, is these sorts of things. There's sorts of things where there's a lot of data to be crunched through, and you can do it in an isolated way. Now, the second example is something from my application that I'm working on now. So I'm not going to get into it in too much detail because I want to keep it under wraps. But the lesson I learned from this was, and I know it in more detail because, of course, I'm doing it right now. The lesson I learned from this is that you want to add little random variations to those data tests, to the test data that you're running. Now, Wolf, when you're writing out your tests, how do you write out the data? How do you represent the data that's going to go into the tests?
I'm partial to the in-memory SQLite stores.
Really? So you make a database to contain the data?
It depends on the what type of data is, but sometimes a simple, actually now that I think about it, probably more often, especially with the Objective-C literals, it kind of jamming data directly into your source code is actually doesn't look nearly as bad as it used to. So I'll do that, or I'll just like write out it. I have like ASCII p list that I read it at runtime, stuff like that. But yeah, I guess I'm more, now that I think about it, the in-memory store I'm used primarily against when I'm doing like web objects. When I'm doing core data unit testing, where right. I want to be able to even save my managed objects, but obviously I don't want them to hit the disk. So yeah, when I'm actually dealing with literal test data, I guess I tend to do it in inline code or a plist if it gets excessive.
Real programmers do it inline, is that the thing?
if you want to go that way.
Oh, I do. So what I've tended to do, and I wonder how common this is. I must have picked it up from somebody else. Is I will do it in the source code file for the most part. I've also done plists sometimes, but I find them to be kind of chatty, like with all the tags, make it hard to read the data out of them.
That's why I say ASCII plists.
Yeah, right. But I still, yeah. So the old school plist style, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's some big disadvantages there, but you can't beat it for readability.
Correct. So what I do is I put it in the source code file as, so I define a struct with the inputs and outputs, the expected data, et cetera. And then I make a C array of those structs that I assign to a global variable. So it's not, the data isn't defined in a method, it's defined outside of a method. So that limits what kind of data I can put in it. But with that limit, that means that the typographical interference is pretty low. So there isn't a whole lot of, add object and blah, 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 blah. It's all pretty much as tabular as you can get in a source code file. And that does mean that I have to write some helper functions to take the scalar data, take the C strings, and turn them into actual objects. But again, that's what I'm used to, and it also seems to work pretty well. But you mentioned it can be, well, I guess maybe you didn't mention, I'm going to mention, that when you put a lot of stuff into those data formats, it can be pretty hard to read. It can be pretty hard to wade through all of that data. And so it really feels like it's write-only data in that case, because when you come back 6 months later, it's going to be hard to remember all the logic that went into the choices you made for these tests. It's going to be hard to find the test that does the thing that you want. So the long-winded point of all this is you don't necessarily want to test every little minor variation. You don't want every little minor variation to add another additional dimension of tests. So, you know, you have 100 tests and you say, oh, but there are three variations to each one of these tests. Well, you don't want to then make it 300 tests. You still want to leave it at 100 tests, but then add those minor variations, sort of stick them in around, sort of at the edges, you know, in other tests where you can sort of vary a couple of these minor things in a test, which is nominally testing something else, you know, do that there. And so then keep down your testing size is my recommendation. And what I found recently was that one of those minor variations where I just, let's just vary this because I can, actually uncovered a flaw in the logic that I was using such that I had to pretty much rethink my entire implementation for that particular piece of functionality. And it was great. It's great to find that kind of problem now as opposed to, you know, 2 months from now when much more of the application is done and I've written in my assumptions much more deeply into the rest of the application functionality. So that's the way I do it, and that's the way I recommend doing it. So all of this assumes that you're using Xcode to do your coding and testing. And so I'd like to talk about that for a little bit. Xcode now, Xcode 4.5, we're up to 4.5.2, is much better than it was. So unit testing functionality was added to Xcode in Xcode 2.1, and it was added using the OC unit testing framework from Sente. Senta, do you know how that's pronounced?
I don't officially know, but I'll go with Sente.
But you've heard rumors. So they're a software development company in Switzerland that does Objective-C development. They go back to 1994, according to their website, which means they were a Next shop. So hardcore, long-time folks. And they even have on their OC unit webpage, which I will put a link to in the show notes, June 6, 2005, Xcode is now distributing OC unit as an integral part of Xcode 2.4.2.1. And I don't think that webpage has been updated since 2005. So that's kind of bad for them, I guess, but it's good for us because it means it has a nice little historical record of how things work. So it worked when they threw it in, but it really kind of showed its origins. Because when you throw a third-party solution into an application, and this third-party solution was sort of built to work around the way the application works, well, then it's not the most integrated experience. Now, to get tests working properly, I turned back in those old Xcode 2 and 3 days to a series of posts by Chris Hansen. And Chris Hansen works at Apple, but his posts about how to get unit tests working in Xcode were done on his own personal website. It's actually LiveJournal. Now, he wrote a couple of posts in 2005, and then he updated them in 2007, and then kind of wrote a final article about it in 2008 to go over Xcode 3 details. And so I'm going to put a link to the sort of overall page, which has links to the other stuff, in LiveJournal into our show notes. Now, he does have a new blog called eschatologist.net, which is where he actually wants people to go. And if there were a link to that sort of roundup article in Eschatologist, I would have link to that instead, but there isn't. So Chris Hansen, if you're listening, I would be happy to link to a new article if you have one in Eschatologist. Sort of keep the kids off of LiveJournal because that seems to be a thing. So he actually wrote 4 posts and he said, unit testing Cocoa frameworks, debugging Cocoa framework unit tests, unit testing Cocoa applications, and debugging Cocoa application unit tests. So as you can tell, in sort of the old way of doing things in Xcode, it was actually more of a big deal to debug versus build than it is now. And if you look at these articles and sort of their updates over time, there were an ever-increasing list of Byzantine steps to get it all working, especially debugging. So it was really pretty clear that while it was the functionality was in there, it was never a first-class citizen. Now, all that's pretty much changed with newer versions of Xcode. There is a new Xcode unit testing guide document from Apple, and I will put a link to the show notes, link in the show notes for that as well. Although, of course, with developer links, as we're all aware, or at least as I'm telling you now, it may change. So I'm sorry if you come back here in 3 years and you listen to this podcast and it's broken.
Search more like 3 hours.
Xcode unit testing guide. And it's actually really nice. It steps through everything you need to do to get these tests working in Xcode. And there are far fewer steps than there used to be. Now, the Xcode document talks about two different kinds of tests, logic tests and application tests. And the logic tests at least seem to correspond to unit tests. Application tests are just, well, so what logic tests are is, well, okay, taking a step back. In Xcode, in order to get your tests working, you make a separate unit test target. It's a bundle, and what Xcode will do is then link that bundle against your application in order to do the tests. When I first heard about this arrangement, I thought it was pretty cool, because the idea of sort of injecting code into your application officially, as opposed to like some sort of hack, it's exactly the right thing to do, because what you don't want is you don't want to have your application set up all the way it's going to be set up when you submit it to the App Store, for example. And then a second target that's the same thing, but with a unit test added in. You want some way to have just one target for each thing. And Apple and Xcode have done this almost since the beginning of having their unit tests in here. And so let's see. So what they do is, for the logic tests, that bundle is linked against just a little helper application, like a little probably a command line application. For the application tests, it's linked against your actual application. So your application actually launches, and then the unit tests are added in somehow. I don't think it's mock inject, but it might be something sort of more official. But it's something along those
lines. Yeah, it's definitely not mock inject. I think it's just NS bundle loading type stuff.
Yeah. Oh, well, that makes it sound, you know, blasé. So
we can't all be the cool kids.
Don't I know it? Okay, so it runs your application, and then the tests run while the application is running, and then it quits again. Now, for iOS, in both cases, they launch the simulator with this. And I actually think you can, for the application tests, you might be able to also run them on the device. I think logic tests, you can only run them in the simulator.
That's what it says in the little box I'm looking at right now. iOS, logic tests run only in simulators.
But it makes a lot of sense, because it's if you have a large application, well, that's less of a big deal for iOS apps. But if you have a large application, especially on the Mac side, it's really nice to just be able to run them in the most minimal environment possible. So let's see. And the other thing is, as I said before, in these sort of historical documents that Chris Anson has, they make it clear that you need to handle debugging and building separately. But in both cases, they're actually just running your app. It's just that in the case of debugging, you're actually running it under the debugger kind of officially, so you can use breakpoints and everything else. In the current version of Xcode's unit testing, breakpoints will always work. So you test, and testing is a standard scheme action, so that's cool. When you say test, and you have a breakpoint in your unit test or in your application anywhere, that'll get hit. So very nice. Very nice to have that. And also in the scheme editor somewhere, you can choose which tests to run. And before, you had to comment out tests that you didn't want to have run. Now you can just check things off or add things, remove things. That's great too. And also the test results are in actual sub-items of your build results. And so I'm old enough now to remember when it was just text that you got. You had to sort of parse it yourself. This is much better. still have a few quibbles about the UI. It doesn't wrap and show you the entire error message by default, which I find annoying because the error messages are almost always really long for my tests anyway. But and as I said, the last good thing that I'll reiterate is that they have this document, which is new, which is much better than documents edited and maintained personally on their own time by Apple employees. It's much better to have an official document. So I would say that the sums up for Apple's unit testing capabilities at the moment. It's probably still behind in certain ways. I think, especially, you know, Ken Peck has been using Java tools, for example, to do his test-driven development. So I bet that they probably have more functionality there than Xcode. But Xcode is certainly better than it's ever been. And so even if you, as a new developer, are saying, well, all this stuff sounds pretty basic, trust me, it's the lap of luxury compared to what it was before. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I will agree with you that unit testing support in Xcode has definitely gotten better. And it's been sticking in my craw for a long time. And so I have less to complain about in terms of Xcode's unit testing.
But not nothing to complain
probably
about.
Probably the biggest is that, winding back a little bit. You were talking about having these separate projects when you were talking about the refactoring text box and kind of putting it in its own project. That will allow you to iterate faster and simpler because it wasn't bundled. You didn't have to go through the lengthy build process of Xcode, and it was its own world and stuff like that. I actually, apparently in 2003, I blogged about a concept like this, which I called test dance, which was the idea of creating a new empty project and kind of away from the real project lives in and kind of like iterating on that. And so it's I really, really love Test Dance. I think Gus Mueller and I were running a contest there a few years back about who had more .xcode proj files on our hard drive, because I tend to create, I don't know, probably on average 4 a day or something like that, because this is how I work. This is how I'll create a new project to try something out, and then abandon it with what I learned. Maybe some code makes it over, some code doesn't. And I get the impression he works in a similar way. But I just have thousands of Xcode projects. And so test stands are super great, and I highly recommend them. And I'll throw you a link so you can put it in your show notes. So the problem with test stands is that you mentioned that we're doing some sort of string detection, string manipulation in what you're doing. And you're like, okay, so this is just a foundation tool. And foundation tools are great for when you like want to make sure that the code you're writing has no UI component. It's cross iOS and cross Mac, so it doesn't care about UI view versus settings view or something like that, or core graphics models or whatever. And foundation tools are great for putting this for test stands of that type of stuff. One of my big beefs with Xcode's current unit testing support is that unit tests don't actually work when you have foundation tool projects. That because of the way it works with the bundle injection, and because tools don't have run loops by default, that doesn't really seem to work. I don't know the technical details about how unit tests are injected, but I get the impression that it happens after the first run loop, the run loop runs, and then it notices the flag saying, oh, you should load these new testing bundles and run them,
yeah,
and that's
be something
how
like
it
that.
Works
sure.
or something like that, mm-hmm. or maybe even the bundles override the first dispatch of the first event or something. I don't know. But point is that it doesn't work with foundation tools, which is such a slam dunk with these test stands. And that really sad. The second thing that I have a problem with Xcode, and this is kind of the Sente history, is that, man, those macros are that you have to use for unit testing are just, they feel like 1994. They're very verbose. Each of them demands a description parameter. And I always just pass nil there because it's usually insanely obvious from the test code itself what I'm talking about there. So when it fails, it's not like this is a message that will bubble up to the user. This is by programmer for programmer. Right. So those descriptions I tend to almost never use them. And unfortunately, they're required everywhere because that's like where macro technology was in 1994. And it would be, a pain to go through and rewrite all these macros to kind of use like modern macro syntax, or maybe even something better with blocks. I don't know. But that's this, you know, what the advancements they made has not been in that arena, which is sad.
Yeah, well, they haven't touched, you know, that what Xcode's been doing has been building on top of it, but it's still actually using the same foundation that they had back in 2005. It really, really doesn't feel like that's changed very much at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to bring up, unwinding further, is that you mentioned the timing issues when you have AppleScript to drive your app. You have to, you know, you put a timer in there, wait a couple seconds, then you have to, oh, wait 4.5, wait 5 seconds, wait 10 seconds, what have you. You know, this the accessibility API is can notice when like Windows come to the forefront, and unfortunately it doesn't seem to. I'm pretty sure it's not like event loopy, that it probably doesn't know when like that window is actually like done drawing its stuff and maybe ready to accept events, but that might just fall out of this how inter-process communication works in general. So accessibility API is probably pretty good at noticing when windows pop up and kind of enumerating their contents and maybe even figure out when they're ready to accept messages. Like maybe you could throw like some sort of a no-op message at a window that appears and just kind of wait for you to get that response back and then you know it's good to go. Oh, yeah. But accessibility in general seems like a pretty good API for that type of testing. Is kind of, there's this Unix tool called Expect, which I don't think I've ever used in Anger, but it's similar to that. It's like you write your script and you're like saying, okay, expect that when I pull down this menu, pretend to pull this menu, execute this menu item, they expect that a window will appear. And let's wait until it appears. And now it can go to the next step. So those types of timing issues can disappear. And accessibility, likewise, it's a higher level than simple pixel matching, so that you can, you know, make sure that there is a button that is called OK, and there is a button called cancel, and kind of set up your assertions there. And so it doesn't matter if you move those around at all, or if your fonts change on your system because you're running beta OS, that's obviously at a higher level.
Well, that's the thing. Like when you, that makes sense, and that's good. So you said expect.
Expect is the standard Unix tool where you can like mix. Is this like what it sounds from what I understand is that you expect a string from something and your code blocks to get it.
Right, but you need to write the code to integrate that with the UI. Option writer, is that actually?
I don't know what level you're talking about. Who's you and what responsibility are we talking about?
Well, okay, yeah, we don't have to necessarily go into detail. Okay, I'll look at it. I'll look it up. And put something in the show notes for it. But the one thing there is like when you talk about, well, check whether this button exists. You know, if your tests, like those are exactly the kind of tests that I find the most useless is, you know, you're not going to delete the button, you know, like even taking a minute to write a test, which says, well, the button there when the button is created in a zip and never touched code wise, except to determine whether it's dimmed or activated, you know, that's just busy work for them.
Yeah, I totally agree. Don't check for the button. But if you have a kind of workflow type thing where you have multiple windows or even this, you know, single window, that doesn't matter. But you have to go through multiple steps. You want to make sure that all the steps work. Like, for example, refactoring is pretty involved, kind of workflowy type piece of software there. So that would kind of make sense where you expect a sheet to drop down. And you want to type into this panel, this NSText field when it shows up, and you hit the OK button. Now you're waiting for something else, and you want maybe look inside the text components and make sure that that it got refactored correctly, that type of stuff.
Sure. I've done some things in the past with that sort of testing. It's not something I'm going to spend a lot of time on in the foreseeable future, just because there's better things you can spend your time on.
Yeah, I agree. That the entire workflow kind of UI testing automation type stuff is unfortunately tends to is maybe if the tools got a lot better, it would be a different story, but it tends to be not as valuable and not valuable of our time. So we just tend on to do it.
Right. Yep. Okay. So anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Does it? Okay, great. So let's see here. Okay. So please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com. All one word, For show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more, you can also find us individually on Twitter, me, Apontius, A-P-O-N-T-I-O-U-S, and that's also my username on app.net, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench, that's the word rent, R-E-N-T plus Z plus S-C-H. And we'll see you next time.